Welcome to the Mother Daughter Best of Friends podcast with myself, Becky Measures, and my rather bonkers, not a day over fabulous, inspiring mummy, Wendy Watson, founder of the Hereditary Breast Cancer Helpline. Not only do we have the usual mom-girl-child relationship with a couple of grandkids thrown in, we are forever connected by our love of musicals, random scenarios, and a faulty breast cancer gene, BRCA1. Between us, we hope you relate to the madness of a typical, or maybe not so typical, mother-daughter relationship. We hope we create lots of laughs, but more importantly, we hope we inform and raise plenty of awareness of hereditary breast cancer, so that anyone who should need it has a breast friend in us. So here we are then, Mother, in the lovely Casa Hotel, in one of their very lovely, lovely rooms that they very kindly lent to us today to have our hair and makeup done. It's all getting quite real now, isn't it?
Yes, it certainly is. Hair and makeup for a podcast.
I knew you'd say that. Well, the thing is, right, you know, all of these things need promoting. Right. And I'm not just going to have a selfie of me and you to be plastered everywhere. Right. So I thought what we'd do is we'd bring in the experts because, come on, both of us, maybe we've let ourselves go a little bit. So we just need a little bit of help.
You're not kidding.
I thought you were going to say speak for yourself then. So we need to say a massive thank you to the lovely Jen Edwards, who has donated her time today to come and do our hair and makeup. And also to the wonderful Joe from Model Mentor. And you know, I always think sort of like things kind of, they loop round in the end. And when you find your tribe or when you find your right people, you come back together. And Joe is sort of, do you know, Joe's been in our life for over 10 years.
Yeah, she did the very first BRCA Babes calendar, didn't she?
Yeah.
Yes.
And the very first BRCA Babes calendar was it after I just got Eva May?
Yeah, Eva May was a tiny, tiny little baby.
She was, wasn't she?
Yeah.
And just to give a bit of context, I'm sure we'll talk about this more as we go along, but the BRCA Babes calendar was an idea that we'd had for ages, and it came for me really after I'd had my surgery, and I just wanted everyone to see me boobs, and I thought what better way to do it than to do it in a calendar.
Yes, it was the very first person that you showed your new boobs to was the hospital porter after you came round from the operation.
Did I actually? I can't remember that.
Yeah, you couldn't wait to show everybody.
That's amazing. I knew that I did show him to everybody, but I didn't realise it was the hospital porter.
Yes, it was. Bless him.
Dear, that was some years.
He's busy trolleying you back, you know, when you came out from recovery. He's busy trolleying you back to your room and you're telling him, have a look at these.
I know we're going to talk about this as we go through this podcast, because really we've got so much to talk about. Some people say, don't they, when you're embarking on something like this, well, how are you going to know what to talk about? It's like, how are we going to shut up? That's the problem. So going back to the matter in hand, Jo did our calendar. She was the photographer for that. And she did two lots of BRCA Babes calendars, and she's always been amazing. And she's here today to come and take our pictures for the podcast. So we're so grateful to her. And of course, Casa Hotel, again, they've been a major part of so many things that we've done, including the charity balls that we've held here. We actually launched the BRCA Babes calendar here as well. And when this first opened back in the day, Mr. Perez, who is a wonderful guy, when he first opened Casa, when I was working on a radio station at the time, that was part of the opening. So we actually physically opened the hotel, which is quite weird to think about, actually. 2011, that was.
Golly.
I know, some time ago. But the reason that we sort of sat and have wanted to put this podcast together is because it just makes sense, doesn't it? You know, it makes sense to do it in that you're the founder of the Hereditary Breast Cancer Helpline. Not just that, you pioneered
preventative surgery 30 years ago to the day. It seemed quite fitting that I'm a radio presenter anyway, so probably talking for a living's, you know, useful when you're doing something like this. But for us, it's getting that message over, because when you told me not so long ago that the statistics were 97% of people that carry a gene don't know, I thought, how can that be?
Well, yes, that did astound me. I've got to say, when I found out through Ranjit Manchada, he's done a research project on this. He's a professor down in London, and I only recently met him. And when he gave me the figure that 97% of people that have got a faulty gene are walking around with no idea that they do, in fact, carry a gene fault. And that is very disturbing. And that's so important that we do everything we can to raise awareness, but in a positive way, which, of course, you and I will always do.
You've always done that right from the very beginning. It was always, that was your major thing, was that people were trying to get you to say, this is drastic, this has changed my life. And, you know, they would, I remember they would, right in the very, very early days when you first started doing any kind of publicity to raise awareness, the photographers would try and get you to look serious, and they'd be furious with you because you wouldn't. You just wanted to laugh on every one of them.
Yes, well, I mean, as far as I was concerned, it wasn't a sad thing that I'd done. It was a glorious thing. I'd come up with the holy grail of ideas, because I'd discovered that 9 relatives had had breast cancer in my family, including mum and grandma. And that, to me, was no coincidence. There was obviously something going on in the family. And in those days, in the early 90s, this is, we're going back a long time, 91, 92, we weren't gene literate in those days. So we didn't know about genes. But it was completely obvious to me that 9 out of 10 relatives was no coincidence. So I thought, well, I've got to do something to help myself from developing this and dying at a young age like my mum did. It was a shocking death. It really was. Not something I'd want anybody else to witness, or even more so, I didn't want to go through it myself. I tried to find any option that I could that would help me prevent myself from developing breast cancer. I was too young to have mammograms. The breast tissue was too dense. I even thought, I wonder if you could take some sort of chemotherapy type drug to prevent it actually starting. And at the time, people thought I'd gone crazy. In fact, that is now an option. But
is it?
It is. Tamoxifen is now.
Of course, yeah.
Yeah. But I heard it on the Jimmy Young programme about this new drug, tamoxifen, that would hopefully stop cancer cells from sticking together when they metastasize throughout the body. And I thought, well, perhaps that could be taken to prevent myself getting it in the first place. And, you know, I mean, that was way before the time it was even considered in that respect. In fact, I will just say this, that taking tamoxifen as a prevention does have a 50% reduction. Not as much as having the surgery that I came up with the idea of having. So once I decided that I needed to do something, I really didn't know quite what. I thought, well, actually, the most important thing is to get rid of the place where breast cancer starts, which is obviously the breast tissue. And once I'd come up with that idea, there's nobody who would have changed my mind. Not at all. And yeah, you're absolutely right. Everybody said, isn't that a bit drastic? And I thought, well, what do you mean drastic? Dying in your 40s or 30s or whatever, that's drastic. Having part of your body removed in order to keep it all is certainly not drastic.
Absolutely.
That's just, you know, okay, yeah, I've had my children and I'm more than prepared to get rid of these things that are just ticking time bombs in me.
You know, now I think about it, because I am that little bit older, obviously, again, you know, we use that word, not a day of a fabulous, but I am 41, on my neck. You were how old when this? You were 36?
When I first discovered that we did have a massive family history, that's a comical story. I must just tell you this. We'd moved to the Peak District. We were in a local pub, and my mum's cousin's daughter, we met up with her husband, and he'd said that she'd had breast cancer twice, once at 32, then again at 39. Her sister had died at 38. Her cousin had just got it. Her auntie had had it in her 40s. Her mum had just developed it in her 60s. And I said, did you know that that's what my mum and grandma had? And obviously they didn't. And this is... So we decided to do a little bit of detective work. And detective is the operative word, because her name's Holmes and mine's Watson. So, I mean, you know, it was meant to be. And we discovered there were 9 people. And so that's when I came up with the, you know, I've got to do something.
And you've got Auntie Diane as well, because you're not an only child. So there's, you know, my auntie, who's a couple of years younger than you, isn't she? And you discussed it between you. And like you say, you just sort of came up with this idea. Well, if breast cancer starts in the breast, then, you know, surely that's the best option. What I'm sort of thinking of now, you know, now I kind of rationalise it in my head, and, you know, I'm that bit older, is at that time, Mum, you were sort of 36-ish, right? Just before that, you had bought a farm by selling off land to different farmers and getting equity that way, right? But so we moved from a semi-detached house in Long Eaton with some fields to then buying a massive farm, right? What I'm saying is that I think people must sort of look at you sometimes and go, this woman's off the scale.
Well, I always think that, you know, we do have obstacles in life, but you have to try and think of a way around them. And, you know, that was one of the things we always wanted. We'd got a semi-detached house and we rented a few fields just down the road. But I tried to find a way of getting us a farm. So I managed to buy a very big farm, but sell most of the land before I bought it to neighbouring farmers, and therefore getting a little farm, which is all I wanted, with just 50 acres for the price of not much more than a semi-detached house. I mean, you just have to find ways of doing things. And you know, if things can be in your control, then you can do anything. Of course, there are certain things that are not in your control. And to me, actually developing cancer, that would have been out of my control. Yeah. And that is not acceptable for me. I am a complete control freak.
Yeah, you are.
I mean, I just am. I can't help it. I just am. I need to know what's going on, that everything's okay, and that's it. And so actually taking control of my own destiny was just an obvious answer to me.
Yeah.
Around 80% of breast cancers are detected because women themselves notice changes in their breasts. Make it easier to spot with the Aware Self-Examination Kit. Available at awarebreastcheck.co.uk. Proud sponsors of the Mother and Daughter Breast of Friends podcast.
And you touched on something the other day as well, because, you know, we're going to share so much of this journey along the way, and we're going to explain more about the, you know, the operations and stuff. But I want to mention this because you touched on it the other day, that you felt that even from a young age, your calling, I always say that your calling, what you're destined to do is to help people, but you didn't know what it would be.
Yeah, I can't say it was necessarily to help people. I know when I was very, very young and I used to go to Sunday school and things like this is in the 50s, 60s.
You went to Sunday school?
I did. Yes.
Did you really?
Yeah, I did. Yeah. Yeah, we went religiously, and Diane and I used to have a little plan that we would sneak off Sunday school and go and spend our sixpence at the sweet shop. We never actually did that.
How old would you have been then?
Oh, I would be maybe 7 or 8.
You little sneak.
Yeah, and Diane would be 3 or 4, something like that. We never actually did any of that. We always went to Sunday school, but it was always a good fun plan to sneak to think of what sweeties we could buy with the sixpence for the collection. Anyway, that's irrelevant. But I remember being quite affected by one of the Jesus stories at Sunday school, and thinking, you know, I'd love to do. I got a feeling that I should do something like that. But then I didn't know what. But I do remember that distinctly.
Wow.
And you say you call it a calling. I don't know. I just do remember thinking, yes, I'm going to do something that's good.
Yeah, something that's good. See, it's nice that, isn't it? And I think, you know, when you have a mindset like that, everything that you will then just be beautiful, realistically, because you're doing it for the right reasons. You know, whenever you're doing anything, I mean, I don't think anything we've ever done or anything we will ever do will be about money, because we'll always be skint, do you know what I mean?
Oh,
but we'll always have the joy of things being nice and maybe helping people along the helping people along the way.
Yeah, I mean, it's more important, really. I mean, the difficulties, of which we'll address at some point, I've no doubt. But I was asked to set the helpline up in 1996. And yes, I immediately agreed to it. And then no matter what obstacles have been put in my way, and there have been quite a number, I've been determined that this will continue, and it didn't matter what it took, it would continue, because it has had such a wide reach, much wider than I had ever thought. And in fact, it was the first helpline in the world, and I was invited over to Heidelberg, Frankfurt, Barcelona, Marseille, in Europe, to give a series of talks on it, on the psychosocial aspects of testing for genetic breast cancer.
So what to the likes of me, it's right, okay, you're saying the word psycho, I'm saying that's something to do with the mind. What is that?
Okay, so psychosocial aspects. It was basically, is it a good thing to test people for a breast cancer gene when there's nothing particularly you can do to prevent it? Or is there something that's acceptable to do to prevent it? Because at that point, you know, in Italy and France, you know, the thought of mastectomy was absolutely out of the question. Now, so I poll up at these meetings, and I'm there laughing and joking, and I'm telling my own story, making people laugh, actually. But I'm also giving anecdotes of people that have since used the helpline and felt exactly the same.
Liberated.
Completely liberated. Mm. And I had no idea, again, until a few days ago, that there were hundreds of research papers sprung from this series of lectures conferences that I attended. I call it a lecture. It wasn't a lecture. I just gave a talk.
Mm.
That's how I like to look at it.
Yeah.
And
you're sharing your experience and how you feel from a patient's point of view.
Yeah.
And this is always the case, isn't it? I mean, these doctors and these professors that we have, they are marvellous, and they are absolutely brilliant at the research that they do. But the majority of them haven't lived it.
It is the lived experience that's very, very important, because until you are in the shoes of somebody who is facing a massive risk, you cannot really envisage what it feels like.
Mm.
And also, I wanted people to understand that actually this has far from made me introverted. Far from that. It, you know, I didn't have reconstruction. It wasn't available at the time. I was invited to go back 6 months later to have the reconstruction, and I couldn't decide what size to be. And 30 years on, I've still not decided. So we've still not had it done, but that's no, that won't happen now, I can assure you.
Well, you never know, you know. You're never too old for anything, Hubbard. That could be an interesting topic, couldn't it?
No, it's not a topic at all. I'm fat enough as it is without having an extra few pounds put on.
I hope one episode that we do talk about, you know, the surgery where they can suck bits from different bits and put it at the top, because I'm still thinking that's something I need to go back and do eventually, but only for the wrong reasons. So, yeah, you felt liberated, and you felt like, because, again, you'd taken control what felt like a sort of black hole, I suppose, of 9 out of 12 women and what was meant to be your fate. You had reversed that, you know what I mean, and taken control, which would have just like been like fireworks. And then, therefore, you know, what I always say is sort of quite impressive, but very typically you, is you had this operation. And I remember coming to see you when I was a kid. I mean, one of my favourite things about you being in hospital was that Siso, or Chriso, or my stepdad, bought me some red Doc Martens. No, not red ones, black Doc Martens while he was in hospital, and you never allowed me to have them. But I convinced him while you were in hospital. And anyway, we came to see you, and you just said you just felt like the luckiest person ever.
Oh, yeah.
On that ward.
Without a doubt. I mean, being serious here, I'm in a ward with 29 other women, all who'd had surgery for suspected breast cancer, for lumps, waiting for the results, waiting to know their fate, waiting to know the treatment. And all I had was two scars. I felt the most privileged person in the world.
Was there a sense of guilt while you were in that war, just out of interest? You know what I mean? Like, well, you're sort of sat there thinking, well, I can just go home.
Well, I mean, that was the whole point, that, you know, everybody else was worrying about their, you know, their fate. And everybody was saying to me how brave I am. And I thought, I'm not brave. You are the people that are brave, because you're facing... you know, you're facing whatever the prognosis is going to be. I'm just going home with a couple of scars, and thank you very much. That's got that job out of the way.
Mm, exactly. And again, like you sort of basked in that for a little bit, and then it was like something, like a light bulb went off, and you went, you know what, there's not going to be just me. Because by that point, obviously, you'd met Gareth, you'd met the team at Manchester that had filled you in, that, you know, they were looking at these genes, but they hadn't yet found them. So you were sort of very heavily invested with Gareth and the team at Manchester, weren't you?
Yeah, I mean, the thing is that I always want to know everything. So Gareth very kindly gave me a load of the teaching modules on genetics. And then when I realised that probably one in 200 people carry a gene fault, they were still looking to find BRCA1, which he suspected would be what would be in our family, and it was. We were one of five families chosen to help find BRCA1, which was quite good.
I remember those blood tests. Yeah. I didn't have it because I was too young, but I remember sat round in the post office having it done.
Yeah, everybody had their blood test done who'd had breast cancer. And from that, you know, we helped to discover BRCA1 on chromosome 17,
which was
great. But finding out how many, I then thought, right, I've got to do something to raise awareness of this, because it's not just our family. One in 200 people carry a high-risk gene fault.
Wow.
How many millions is that? You know, how many is that?
You look at the average street.
It's enormous.
You know, a couple of streets, that's...
It's enormous. So I then decided that I needed to do some publicity to raise the awareness. I chose The Independent because I thought that would be a very sensible newspaper and it would write it as it is. I mean, even they were a bit shocked and said, you know, we've got this woman who's rung up and she's had both breasts removed as a prevention. Gosh. Anyway, they sent a very good reporter up, wrote it just exactly as it is. But that springboarded an absolute avalanche of magazines, all who wanted a sensational story. And, I mean, the stuff that they wrote was just absolute and utter drivel. It was things like, as I sit looking out the windows and see the raindrops falling down the panes of glass and that mirrors the tears. And I'm thinking, oh, my good night. So I said, I am not doing any more publicity other than what I have control of. And that's when I was approached to do a TV documentary called The Decision, Living in the Shadow. And I met the opportunity to meet the producer, and she was really, really good. And she completely got from the angle that I was coming at, that I'm positive, I'm here I am, I'm farming away, I'm, you know, living life to the full, I'm out every night doing musicals, I am absolutely living life. Mm-hmm. And, so she got it from my angle. And so when the programme was eventually aired, this actually, it's funny how this is how the helpline started, actually. I got a letter from a young girl called Andrea, who told me that her mum, grandma and great-grandma had all had breast cancer before they were 30.
Wow.
And died. And she was, both her and her sister were both terrified. And she said, I have a little girl of 2.5 and a little boy of 1, and the thought of yet another generation growing up without a mother has always filled me with terror. Mm. So, of course, instantly I rang her, and we were on the phone for, I bet, the best part of 2 hours. Because she said that the service that she was under wouldn't hear of this operation. They thought it was ridiculous. And, you know, she said, at last I've found somebody that understands how I feel. So I promised to ring her breast unit, who was dealing with this, up. And I spoke to Professor Blamey. He's not alive anymore, actually. But he said, oh, my dear, just because you've been on television, does that mean you know more about my job than I do? And I said, well, I didn't think it was anything to do with jobs and televisions. I was just trying to put the patient perspective to him, that, you know, how amazing I felt. Mm. And how I could understand how Andrea and Rhonda both felt. Because, you know, and he said, well, only one of them might have the fault. Oh, well, that's really good.
All right.
You know? Oh, yeah. Marvellous.
Let's gamble with that then, shall we? Yeah,
wonderful.
Yeah.
And
is that your choice?
Yeah. And he said, well, until a test's available, I don't think that they should embark on this. And that was, well, we didn't know when the test would be available for them, really, because they got no living relatives to be compared with. And we knew that apart from BRCA1 and BRCA2, which had now been found, there were going to be a lot more genes. Mm. And there are dozens more have been found.
Which, again, and, you know, we are going to cover throughout these podcasts and talk about as well.
And we are so lucky that we've got some absolutely top of the field experts in every single aspect, all prepared to come on and be part of our podcast. It's amazing. It really is amazing.
It is exciting. And, you know, and it's lovely. But I think that just goes to show the mutual respect that everybody has, you know, for each other. And just to give an update as well, like with the Andrea and Rhonda thing, if you would like to look, there's a video that we will be sharing on our social media platforms where they talk about this in one of the little films that we had done for one of our charity balls. So we can share that. And also Living in the Shadow as well is available as well to watch.
Yeah, I believe it is, yes.
So we will be sharing that on all of our platforms. And the most beautiful thing is that they are well into their, in fact, are they in their, I don't say, are they in their 50s?
They're
now?
In 50s, yeah.
And they are still fine and they are flourishing and
it's
wonderful, isn't it?
Well, yeah. I mean, it's just amazing to be able to, you know, what can you give people that's, you know, other than the gift of life? I don't think there's a bigger gift that you can give anybody, is there?
I wouldn't have thought so, no. Well, I don't even think Jimmy Choo's would do that. Do you know what I mean?
So, Jimmy Choo's.
It is pretty special. And, you know, and I do say this to quite a lot of people, you know, if people are sort of going through a bad time or whatever, I always say, you know, if you find the gift of giving or the gift of making a difference, it's the easiest thing to turn your mindset round, and it's the easiest thing to become addicted to, because there is no better feeling, is there, than when somebody says, thank you, you've changed my life, or in your case, you've saved my life.
I know. It is... it was quite emotional, actually, when I receive texts, letters, emails, cards, you name it, just mentions on social media, Wendy Watson saved my life. Somebody's hashtagged that.
I know.
It's just amazing that people would even do that. But, I mean, all I've done, and really it is all I've done, is make all the options available and give people the opportunity to make their own informed choice.
And then given support.
100%. And I've tried to show that, you know, having a mastectomy, a double mastectomy, as a prevention, has certainly only changed my life for the better. And even though I didn't actually have reconstruction, now you've had the most amazing reconstruction. You look a lot better than you did before.
Cheers, pal. Thank you. You borned me with the little ones. Do you know what I mean? That's your fault.
But no.
But now I get these whoppers and they're marvellous.
But seriously, we don't do it for cosmetic reasons. But what I can say is that, you know, a lot of the surgery these days is amazing. And that's one thing that you've helped pioneer, really.
Well, thank you. And that's lovely. And I think that's, you know, I think we will talk more about like our individual journeys and sort of going into surgery. I think they are like a podcast of their own. Do you know what I mean? But for me, because I was the youngest at the time to ever do this, and I knew my reasonings behind it. We just watched RH, you know, our cousin go through breast cancer, who's not much older than me. And I felt like, you know, I have this choice. It would be ridiculous of me to wait any longer. But they were very stern with me. You know, they were very sort of like, look, this is what you could look like. I remember Andy Belden, who was my surgeon, Mr. Surgeon Extraordinaire, saying, you could possibly look and feel like you've been run over by a train, right? So when I woke up and saw the boobies the new ones that I had and how I felt, I had that sense of elation that you did. Do you know what I mean? Of like, what on earth? My life's been saved and I've got this incredible pair of boobs. That, you know, and I certainly don't look like I've been run over by a train. And for me, I wanted to get that across to our generation because of it getting younger. I wanted to make sure that they could see and be accepted. And that is why, you know, people will say, oh, I've felt your boobs on the back of a bus or behind the back of a truck. Because we've been in scenarios where it's been very useful for people to see that. And that's why I've kind of wanted to lead that. But obviously with the reason behind it, you have to know why you're doing it in the first place. Because without that...
Yeah.
It's no good.
No, and not everybody will have the result that you've had.
And that's what I need stressing. It annoyed me a lot because I was so young. You would get these people that would go, oh, she's only doing it for a free boob job. And you're like, are you joking? But that's, you know, that's the different mindset. But you need to know that you're doing it for the right reasons.
100%. That's the most important thing. You do need to know that it can go, you know, you can go wrong. You can need to have multiple operations. I don't want to put a negative spin on this at all.
No.
But I do need people to understand the limitations of everything. So, you know, there are four options at this moment. One is do nothing. Two is be screened regularly in the hope of catching it early. Three is go on to tamoxifen, which is one of the things I kind of thought of in the early 90s, but now is a partial prevention. And the fourth thing is to have surgery. And there are many, many different types of surgery. And that in itself, I hope we will cover in a podcast with, you know, a couple of really helpful surgeons that we've found throughout our years of running the helpline and doing all the publicity that we have done.
I mean, Andy, when my surgeon at the time, Andy Belden, I remember him being very sort of pioneering because he would cut differently, right? And I know that sounds a bit harsh, but he would, because he'd be taking into consideration, like, if you wanted to wear a bikini or, you know, where the scars would be. That doesn't even really come into it now. I mean, I don't even see my scars at all in the slightest.
They're not visible.
Well, they're just not, no. You know. And I think, yeah, we do need to do a whole episode on this, because maybe research into surgeons is a good idea.
Oh, gosh, yes. Because, I mean, one of the things I always advise people when I'm talking to them, if they've decided to have surgery, is when you go to see your surgeon, whatever operation they suggest, ask if you can see some photos, because most surgeons worth their salt will have taken photographs.
Oh, yeah.
Of their results, good and bad.
Absolutely. I look through books and books of boobs I did before I went in. But again, it was very different for me because I was the youngest. They'd never done anything like it on sort of this type of tissue, if that makes sense. But now, you know, there is a lot more out there. I think there's so many different things that we, you know, as I say, we will be covering on this podcast, how to get genetic testing. We're going to be speaking to experts. We're going to be speaking to surgeons. We're going to be speaking to all kinds of people. But obviously as well, if you want to be involved in this, feel free to get in touch with us. If you want to share your story as well and be able to fill everybody else in, you're more than welcome to get involved, aren't you?
Oh, please do. Please do. And the helpline number, I'm going to give it out now, even though this isn't what this is about, but it's 01629 813 000. It is covered from probably 8 in the morning till about 6 in the evening. An answer phone is available, but also social media. I will answer up till 4 o'clock in the morning because I'm always awake till then. So we've got our Facebook pages and email. I'll always answer your email straight away. And I'll always ring you back from my mobile when the helpline's not available. So, you know, I run as near as possible to 24 hours.
She does. I promise you that she does. You might get a reply at about 2 o'clock in the morning sometimes, but that's absolutely fine because usually that's when you're up and that's when you're thinking about it. We've got loads of things that we want to cover. If there's anything as well that you want to ask and want us to cover on this podcast, again, please do get in touch. I'm wrapping this up because the food's arrived. We've had breakfast delivered by Casa.
Oh my goodness.
Look at these trays and trays of food coming in here. Casa, we love you. Thank you so much. So again, if you want to follow us, we are following us on all of the social media platforms. And you know what? We've even got a TikTok now.
A TikTok?
We've even got a TikTok.
Oh my goodness.
Mom and daughter, Breast of Friends.
Oh wow. Well, I already know that people have been saying, I'm really looking forward to this series. And I'm hoping that even though it's going to be, it's an information series, but I'm hoping it's going to be fun. I really am.
Well, I think I might influence that a little bit because, you know, I want to use this as well as, like, you know, being informative. We are a mother and daughter dynamic. We are, you know, we are a bit ballsy at times. How's about coming to a rave with me in a couple of weeks?
Are you joking?
Not at all. I thought that was better than skydiving, but we'll get round to that.
I'm not, definitely. That's 100% I am not skydiving. I'm not going anywhere near a plane unnecessarily.
We shall see. Thank you so much for tuning in on our first episode. Hopefully we've introduced this quite nicely. We're going for some snap now. And a big, big thank you again once more to Joe from Model Mentor and also Jen Edwards as well for our makeup today. Keep your eyes open for the pictures that are coming soon. Are we going to like them?
We'll have to have a look.
I'm hoping that she takes 4 stone off me. We'll be all right.